This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, well, Ahab the Arab. Remember that song, Shane Ahab the Arab, King of the Vernon Sands? Yeah, well, I guarantee if you played that song today on a radio program, you'd be run out on a rail for being a bigot and being a racist and for being, you know, a knuckle-dragging, short-minded. Well, you might be anyway. You know, I mean, look at you. I got a mirror here. Look at yourself.
You know, I've had racist epithets thrown at me. I've never been bothered by them.
No, probably not. Anyhow, the reason I bring up Ahab the Arab, not to offend anyone, is because it's one of the top most offensive Halloween costumes for 2015. And in fact, Shane, don't you have a thing there from some college campuses that if you think that, if you, and who would do this, by the way? What college kid is going to call the hotline, hey, if I dress up like fill in the blank, am I going to offend someone? But they really have, I think it was Wesleyan University has like six people on staff.
That you, they list a phone number. These are posters they're putting around the campus. Halloween checklist. Is your costume offensive?
Check, well, I hope so.
Your friends asked, does this costume mock culture or religious symbols such as dreadlocks, headdresses, afros, bindis, etc.?
But if you're offensive to Christians, it's probably okay. If you're offensive to Republicans, like Donald Trump dressing up like Donald Trump, it's not offensive. It's funny. And it is funny.
Yes, Trump's hair is funny. I don't care what.
And apparently, you know, I've got the list of that I found on Huffington Post. Dressing up like an Israeli soldier, by the way, universally condemned. Do not dress up like an Israeli soldier because that's mean-spirited to anybody of Arab or Persian descent, apparently. Dressing up like Caitlyn. Which I can assure you, just for the sake of argument, I am not going to do. Just so we're clear on that, I'm not going to dress up. Now, does that make me? Now, hold on. Let me ask you something. This is a serious question. If I would absolutely refuse to dress up like Caitlyn, what's more offensive, the fact that I would or the fact that I would not?
That's right, because now you're deeming Caitlyn to be offensive because you are offended by
whatever that is.
Transgendered, yeah.
Anyhow, Call Me Caitlyn came from Halloween Costumes 2015, their website. The sexy Obama Osama costume, which is basically a mini skirt and, you know, a fake beard and so forth. That's apparently offensive. The sexy Ebola nurse costume. The sexy Ebola nurse costume making the top grouping of highly offensive costumes for 2015. But, you know, here's the point, boys and girls. Where is Sam Kinison when we need him?
He passed away.
I understand that, but good. Nobody has a sense of humor anymore. Everybody's, we're offended. Shut up and get over being offended. You know what? If you're offended, good. Because every good comedian offends just about everybody in the crowd at least once, and some people two or three times. And Halloween costumes should be a bit offensive on occasion, shouldn't they?
Well, the shock factor is where the comedy, which is Halloween costumes, present humor in most cases, especially with adults.
They're mocking something.
My dorky disco dancer outfit is mocking
poor people, apparently, because you got it from Volunteers of America.
Yeah, that's
the hell is wrong with you, insensitive bigot.
Yes, which and proud of it. But you know, people are offended by the darndest things these days.
Mm-hmm. You know, the hot Pocahontas outfit. clearly over the line for a variety of reasons. You know, you cannot be a hot Pocahontas. And trust me, I cannot be a hot Pocahontas. I can assure you, I would not make the cut.
Yeah, but I can think of some people that would... Oh, never mind.
Well, one comes to mind just right off the top of my head that I'd probably be able to pull that off pretty well.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Yeah, you've met her. Here's the thing. What is it with people anymore that everything offends them? Everything is off limits. You can't talk about anything. And you have these safe zones at campuses. And you have hotlines, college hotlines. Is my costume too offensive? Am I offending some? What if somebody thinks their feelings are hurt? Well, I have good news. At most of these campuses, if somebody has been offended, there's a safe zone that they can run to where there are no thoughts allowed of any sort. It's just it's a blank mind area, so that no thinking will be required, which is what most of these college kids need to go to these safe zones. No thinking required. Can't be offended.
What happens when these kids go out in the real world?
Oh, you mean where where they keep score and there's competition and people say offensive things all the time and compete for dollars and they call the government. And then they have these things proclaimed hate speech. So therefore, then you can be arrested for having a thought that's divergent from theirs. See that? No. Don't give me that look. Who the hell do you think you are to have a thought that is different from the homogenized version of thoughts that you're supposed to have?
Well.
How dare you?
I do it all the time.
We'll have none of that.
Well, I don't necessarily voice it because I don't want to be arrested for being offensive in a hate speech.
Yeah,
well, but anyway, yeah.
We say that tongue-in-cheek, sort of, but is it really that far away? Is it really that far away that people will be writing you tickets or calling the local constable and say, well, he said this, or he dressed up like a Muslim, or he dressed up like whatever it may be, and therefore... I was offended. He was dressed up like Caitlin, and I was offended. He was dressed up like a Native American. I'm offended. He was dressed up like a nurse in a miniskirt, and I think that demeans a perfectly sound profession, and therefore I am offended. He dressed up like a policewoman. What? He dressed up like a policewoman? He did the Caitlin version with a badge and a gun, whatever, and I'm offended.
Handcuffs comes to mind.
You have real problems.
Just saying.
I understand. I talk policewoman in your mind in the gutter somewhere.
It wasn't in
and that offends me. What you just said, I find offensive.
Accessorizing
my... I'm offended by that kind of a comment. I mean, in fact, I think we should go one step further. I think that Halloween promotes generalized hate speech, and I believe that Halloween should just be banned in totality. It should just be outlawed because of the offensive things that happen on Halloween.
In addition, what's the most poisonous thing to your system? Sugar. What do? We give these kids
absolutely. So we're giving sugar, and there is no doubt in my mind that because of the capitalism involved, Halloween is the number two holiday now, only to Christmas and money spent, if you didn't know that. Halloween is number two now and money spent. And so therefore, clearly all of these costumes made in places like China and Honduras and Mexico are contributing to global warming. And so therefore, you dressing up to offend people as Caitlin is worse yet, my friends, because you're destroying the planet at the same time. This all contributes to child welfare violations as child labor in China and global warming and offending people. So how dare you do any of these things? It's time to outlaw Halloween altogether.
Well, do zombies offend people and do they really pollute like live human beings?
Well, if we had cap and trade on zombies, it might be worth something. It's all Friday. Your thoughts after this.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
Never before have I turned on you when you look too good to me. Your beady eyes that can cut me in two and I just can't let you be. But it's a free for all and a heart of sin. You can bet your life. Stakes are high and so am I. It's in the air tonight.
It's the perfect day to get involved with the program. Had a host of callers so far on this free for all Friday. You could be next by dialing 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. You know, if I could play Sam Kinison on this program, I would, but I haven't found a clip longer than 10 seconds that you could actually play, and the 10-second clips are just not that funny. You know, everything gets beeped out, and so it is. And if he knew about Obamacare, there'd be a lot more beeps in his diatribe, in his shtick, if you will. Justin Haskins, the next guest here, editor of the Heartland Institute, and we're learning now that another 500,000 people could lose their Obamacare subsidies. This comes after the news that some folks, a lot of folks, millions of people, will see their premiums increase by more than 50% in the next few months. You know, what happened to saving $2,500 for each and every one of us? I am yet to realize that $2,500, and I'll be honest, I could use that money right now to buy an offensive Halloween costume. You know, so just keep that in mind. Justin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So 500,000 more are going to find themselves out on the streets, not saving $2,500, not benefiting from Obamacare, but I'm going to guess that the funding on our side is going to continue.
Well, I imagine that it will. I mean, I think the interesting thing that no one's talking about is not only are these 500,000 people potentially going to be losing their Obamacare subsidies, but there's another 700,000 people, the IRS reported back in July, who did file their tax returns but didn't fill out all of the Obamacare paperwork that's necessary in order to get a subsidy in 2016. And those people are also at risk for losing their Obamacare subsidies. So you could have over a million people potentially losing their subsidies, and many of them don't even know that it's going to happen because Obamacare re-enrolls you if you're already enrolled in Obamacare. It automatically re-enrolls you if you don't apply again through the system when open enrollment begins in a few days. And so these people are going to wake up one day in January, receive a health insurance bill, and it's going to be significantly higher than they expected it to be.
Isn't it? It's just full of good news. I like that when you come here to spread joy like this, Justin, and spread happiness among the insurance givers, providers, users, and clients. I mean, that's the fact of the matter is, even if you believe that everybody's entitled to insurance in America, and the first person to say that openly as a politician was Teddy Roosevelt more than a century ago, if you believe that Americans are entitled to insurance, at least a baseline level of support and protection, you still couldn't support Obamacare because it's a convoluted mess that has little to do with health care and really has everything to do with how we pay for it. It's about money and mechanisms and insurance companies and government. What the hell does Obamacare have to do with care anyway?
Yeah, well, I think you touched on it. I would go even further and say this was a program specifically designed to control individual Americans, and you're going to see the power of the federal government expand because of Obamacare in the wake of King v. Burwell and other Supreme Court cases. You're going to see the government eventually tell you what kind of food you can eat. You talked a few minutes ago about banning Halloween. I don't think it's a huge stretch that within the next 50 years, we could have a government push that says, you know what, we can't be handing out candy to all these kids walking down the street. They're all going to be obese, and they're going to run around and cause all this chaos for our health insurance system down the road. We can't have that.
Let me ask you something else.
Out of control. I mean, that's not that far off. It really isn't. And people need
to understand, Justin,
when they go to the polls and they elect these people that there are consequences to these actions. And if we keep
people in charge who are
going to try to manipulate and control every aspect of our lives, this is the kind of mess we're going to end up with.
It sure is. Justin Haskins on, editor of the Heartland Institute. And here's the deal. The most vulnerable group of people, one of the most vulnerable group of people when it comes to health care and insurance and so forth, without question, and this is true, are single moms. I think we can agree with that, right?
Absolutely.
Single moms are some of the most vulnerable. Well, here's what we're doing to single moms as a result of Obamacare. You have to sit down and fill out all of these forms because certainly single moms that are running kids back and forth to school and going to soccer practice and trying to hold down a part-time job or two, they have time to sit down and fill out all of these forms, clearly, because what the hell else they got to do besides feed their kids, wash their kids, bathe their kids, do the kids' homework, take the kid to school, take them to soccer practice, so on and so forth. So here is what I'm saying to you, Justin. You want to talk about a war on women, Obamacare, and filling out these forms and demanding that they do all of these things. Otherwise, we're going to penalize you financially. Talk about a war on women. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, there's no question that there's hypocrisy, that the Obamacare system is full of hypocrisy, and single moms are definitely the ones who are going to suffer more than really any other group. And you see this with other things too, with other liberal policies. Look at school choice. I mean, single moms are the ones who make out the best on school choice. They're the ones who use school choice more than any other group, and a lot of Democrats oppose school choice. I mean, the hypocrisy is rampant in Washington, D.C. It's rampant in our state capitals, and that's why we need to support candidates who are going to promote individual liberty and freedom.
Yeah, but the problem is I don't know who those are anymore, for the most part, because the Republicans were swept into power in November of 2014, and it took us nowhere.
It's becoming increasingly so. It's a real issue, but hopefully going forward in the future, we can identify some candidates. I do think there are some good presidential candidates right now. They're not necessarily leading the polls, but I do think there are some good presidential candidates who should be supported. And going forward, hopefully things will improve.
Give me two names. We got to run real quick, but give me two names, Justin, of candidates you think are worth looking at.
Well, the Harlan Institute doesn't promote anyone, but personally, I think that Ted Cruz would be a great candidate, and I think that if Marco Rubio can get his immigration act together, I think Marco Rubio would be a good candidate as well.
Justin, you have a great weekend. Wear something offensive, please.
I'll try. Thanks, Steve.
Attaboy. Way to be a team player. Justin Haskins, the editor from the Heartland Institute, with us. We'll be right back on this Free for All Friday.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
Come on and take a free ride. All right, it's 33 after on Free for All Friday. You're in the right place. Make sure you always have a sharp pencil and extra paper because you have to take notes here in case. There could be a pop quiz at any point. You know, there could be a pop quiz at any point. Matt is on the line real quickly for a free-for-all Friday check-in. Matt, welcome to it.
Yeah, I wanted to mention about the debate with Carson. They went after him for an insurance. He was involved with some insurance company that had his name on the website. They were concerned about him, but they never brought up Obama and Reverend Wright and Ayers and all that stuff when he was running. And it seems so biased to me, this left-wing media.
Oh, it is biased.
Know that.
So well, the worst part about that, Matt, you missed
more.
Yeah, you missed like the worst part about that whole thing about the insurance company. They used his picture on that website. They never did their due diligence. Did the moderators there? Because he said they used my picture. I don't know about that. They never did their due diligence. They tried to tie him to something he had nothing to do with. They looked like idiots. He didn't.
Yeah, that's
my
correct.
Estimation.
But the thing is that they never did information on Obama, which was evidence with Razco, with the purchase of his land, all that stuff with Reverend Wright and Ayers. They never. It was a hidden secret.
I understand.
To say they're looking for hairs in the soup on who's the biggest bigot, racist, homophobic, anti-immigrant for the Republican Party. And on the Democratic Party, they're looking for who's going to solve the student loan problem.
Well, exactly. And what's your favorite ice cream? Matt, I appreciate you stopping in because that's kind of how the debate goes. You know, for the Republicans, the question is, when did you stop beating your wife? And the question of the Democrats is, what is your favorite color and do you like ice cream? There's a lot of truth to that. Let's move on to some more serious matters of the day. The Chinese building islands out of reefs in the South Pacific, giant dredging projects, creating these islands where, during high tide, islands did not exist previously. And now they're creating these islands in an attempt to control the South China Sea, which controls something like $4 to $5 trillion in global trade every year. I mean, it's an important piece of real estate, to say the least. Joining me now is John D. Chocieri, an assistant professor at the Gerald R. Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan. Welcome to the program, Professor. I hope I got your name close.
You did. Thanks very much for having me.
Glad to have you here. This dredging project, the Chinese literally have created islands out of what were reefs that would disappear at high tide. Here they are, and there's at least three of them, and they all have runways long enough to clear the largest bombers in the Chinese Air Force. This should be of great concern.
It is a great concern, and not just, of course, to the United States, but also to a number of U.S. allies and other countries surrounding that South China Sea. As you mentioned, it's a major thoroughfare for commerce, especially energy coming from the Persian Gulf out to the energy needy cities of the Pacific Rim, and it's also a major site for fisheries. So it a lot of people earn their living by fishing in those seas that China has claimed and that others have claimed as well. And of course, in the overall scheme of things, it's also a major potential shift in the balance of influence between China and its neighbors and also the United States.
Have we abdicated our leadership? I mean, many would argue that our leadership position in the world over the last 6 or 8 years has eroded tremendously. Would you agree with that? And would you agree that maybe the United States is no longer the premier player in that part of the world when we come to the Pacific Ocean, the Philippines, Vietnam, Korea, China, that whole region?
We're certainly in danger of ceding too much ground to China in maritime affairs. I mean, this has been the underpinning of the East Asian economic miracle to a considerable extent, the fact that the U.S. has been there to provide a sense of maritime stability and freedom of navigation, and what China has been doing, trying to unilaterally change the facts on the ground, is a direct challenge to that. And so the United States, I think, is very much within its rights to carry out these latest patrols near the man-made Chinese islands, and I think that in fact is overdue.
Okay, so what do you do? Let's start with this then. We do not recognize the 12-mile territorial waters around these islands that were made out of whole cloth, if you will. We clearly do not recognize or respect those boundaries. But what do you do with those islands? If you're not going to respect the 12-mile radius, they've built the islands. They have airstrips. They have airships that will accommodate military jets, bombers, and whatever else they want there. What do we do with those islands now that have been created? I mean, do we respect them in some fashion? We're obviously not going to go step foot on them. The Chinese would clearly, that'd be an act of aggression, an act of war, I would think. But whoa, so how do you address this?
Very difficult, obviously. I agree with you that the U.S. isn't going to conduct attacks on those facilities. But there's also a lot of space between militarized use of those structures and the purported use that China says it wants to use them for, and that is for doing maritime surveillance, cleaning up shipwrecks and the like. And if, in fact, China is given a combination of international pressure led by the United States and also a sort of face-saving way out of the escalating conflict by actually using the islands for what it says it wants to use them for, then we may see that those structures are not such a threat to regional stability. Certainly, if China is allowed to continue to build them larger and larger and then to station military forces there, that's a significant change in the game that's being played.
I don't know. I don't see the Chinese backing out at all. But let's be honest. The Russians have claimed vast portions of the Arctic now for themselves, which, you know, we're in a conflict with Norway and Russia and so forth with what is going to happen with the Arctic. You have the Chinese building islands in the South China Sea. You have other territorial disputes going on. And we have a leader in Washington who is, repulsed by any sort of conflict, it seems. I mean, we don't assert ourselves or our authority or our moral authority anywhere in the world for the last several years. I don't see any real success story coming out of this.
It is hard to imagine an outright success. I mean, for one thing, the United States for a long time has been playing this dance. The difficulty in the South China Sea is nothing new. For years, under multiple administrations, the U.S. has been trying to avoid taking too direct a role in this dispute by saying that the U.S. doesn't take sides on sovereignty, but does take a position on how the various claimants pursue their sovereign claims. And clearly China has violated the spirit of all of the agreements that have been made in that latter category. And so, yes, I mean, I agree with the spirit of what you're saying, that the administration has to step up and has to counter that somewhat more assertively. But it also has to be careful in doing that. As you alluded to a minute ago, there's not an obvious, credible military option here vis-a-vis these structures. if the United States were to, in fact, use military force against Chinese who are stationed at those islands, it could embroil the United States in a large
conflict. Oh, it'd be a huge problem.
Yeah, willing to fight over these reefs, not at all.
But there has to be some place in between. Yeah, there has to be some middle ground, Professor, between, you know, military action and capitulation, which is what it feels like at this point. I have to run. I greatly appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you.
That is Professor John Cucchieri from the University of Michigan here on the Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
All right, it is 45 after on a free-for-all Friday. Michigan State has the weekend off. Michigan will be playing for the first time since that monumental loss to Michigan State. As Tim Staub put it here not that long ago, he said that, it was a spectacular loss. Not so much a big victory for the Spartans, but a spectacular loss for the Wolverines. One of the craziest, most infamous losses probably in sports history, that one will be. At any rate, it's right up there with Cordell Stewart, another spectacular Michigan losses. At any rate, Michigan returns to the playing field this weekend while Michigan State takes the weekend off. Playing Minnesota are the Wolverines, and here is the Dean of Sports, Tim Stout, to join us. Tim, welcome aboard.
Morning, State.
You know, for Jimmy Harbaugh, he said he doesn't respect, you know, that 24-hour rule of you think about it for 24 hours. I think he dwells on this stuff. I think he sits here and dwells on this stuff, and I think that it makes him, well, part of who he is. It makes him more competitive. It makes him angry, and that loss is probably going to irritate him for, well, the rest of his life, and therefore it'll be a motivating factor in his coaching, I think. What do you make of it going into Minnesota?
Well, I heard him say this week that the only way to erase the stench of that loss was to beat Minnesota. And as much as I respect Mike Harbaugh, I completely disagree with that. I don't see how anybody who's a fan of any team or plays on any team in any competitive sport losing in that manner can ever get over that in any way, shape, or form simply because of the ramifications of the way that you lost, especially against, you know, your rival who's frustrated you. I can't think of many games or in any sport where, you know, you had a win that if you took care of business and they just didn't do it. I understand he wants to get his team focused on the next game and not make it two losses instead of one. And he does have a dangerous opponent tomorrow night in Minnesota. And it is in Michigan's best interest to play as hard as it possibly can and win that game and, quote-unquote, try to get back on the right track, because another loss is going to get a lot of questions about how this season's going to end.
Well, sure. And right now, if I'm not mistaken, Wolverines' big favorites, two touchdown favorites. So if they came out on the wrong end of that, it would pose a lot of questions to Michigan.
Well, it's more confusing this week because Minnesota's coach abruptly stepped aside. The assistant there wants the job and is openly campaigning for it. The best way for him to make points is to win games, and certainly winning the Little Brown Jug for the second year in a row would not hurt in that regard. Minnesota's been an up-and-down team all year long, so how Minnesota reacts to the distraction it has had this week is difficult to say. I mean, I think on paper, Michigan clearly is a better team, but I can't get out of the back of my mind the fact that Michigan struggled so dramatically on offense against Michigan State. I mean, I think Michigan was very fortunate to be leading in the first place because Michigan State special teams were, as usual, so weak, and Michigan special teams were very good. That alone, you know, got them just a little bit over the top. Didn't hold them off, but it got them over the top for there. I need to see if Michigan can play much better offensively against Minnesota tomorrow night.
And if they can't, then there's your question. Now, meantime, it seems I see this quarterback from Pennsylvania. If Jim Harbaugh heads a program, quarterbacks just flock like he's the Pied Piper to get him to the NFL, because it's the fifth best passer in the history of the state of Pennsylvania, in the history of the whole state ever, doesn't get a scholarship. He's a walk-on to the University of Michigan.
Well, The one thing I like about Harbaugh that other coaches I don't think respect is how absolutely crucial it is that you have a quarterback. You can have 21 other terrific players, and if you don't have a quarterback in this sport, you're dead in the water. I mean, not having a quarterback, I claim, cost Brady Hoke his job. If he would have had one, he'd still be over there today. But he doesn't. And I think when Harbaugh came in, he knew he had to find somebody to kind of hold the fort down for a year. So he got a guy who started 2 years in the Big Ten who was available, and they've kind of nursed him along. And frankly, I think the experiment, for the most part, has worked pretty well. But obviously, to get to where they want to go, you look at the best teams in the country year in and year out, they've got a quarterback. And Michigan, if they got to get 100 up, they're going to get 100 up so they can find one or two of them that can take them to where they want to go.
And there's no question. You look back to their first loss at Utah, and there were a couple of passes that Rudock overthrew people that were in the wide open with nothing between them and the end zone except two blades of grass. Same thing against Michigan State. You're right. Well, if they'd had a quarterback that was premier, they'd have won both of those games.
I mean, you wonder about Michigan State next year. I mean, they'll have a lot of good players returning, but they're going to have a very inexperienced quarterback, whoever that is, and they rely on their quarterback now as much, if not more, than any other team in the country. I mean, going forward, Michigan State's going to have a tremendous issue figuring its offense out next year around an inexperienced player with what appears to me to be a far tougher schedule than what it had this year. But that's next year's problem for Michigan State, which will be part of the intrigue next year between the two, because both of them next year are going to have a different quarterback.
And before we go today, I got a question for you. Who's going to be on the Lions sideline come next season? Because, you know, Caldwell, what are they, 1-6? It's just a horrible campaign again, and we got about 30 seconds.
Well, you got to wait and play the season out, because they could, you know, if they turn things around to some degree, most NFL coaches get more than 2 years, and last year they were very good. At this point, I don't necessarily think that he's doomed to be gone next year. Now, look, if they finish 2-14, something like that, that might be something different. But, you know, if they're competitive in the second half of the year, my guess would be that he would be back for a third year. But that's a guess.
Yeah, I guess we'll keep an eye on that. USA Today said he's the worst coach in the NFL. I don't know if that might be a little harsh, but it's what they said. Anyhow,
well,
Tim.
Well, I mean, you know, again, last year they were as good a team as they've had in a long time, and but for a crazy call, they might have beat Dallas and gotten another rung in the NFL playoffs. So he must have taken a stupid pill between then and now. But you look at the personnel that he's lost on defense, and I'm not making excuses for him. Maybe he is, and maybe they won despite him. I don't know. He has been fired elsewhere. But I'm not sure that's their central problem, though, either.
All right, fair enough. Tim Stout, the Dean on Sports, always a pleasure. There you have it, everybody. Tim Stout, where do you find him? You find him right here on Free For All Fridays, breaking it all down for you. We'll be right back with some final thoughts after this.